from the wet whistle.
Okay. Hello, Nick. Hello, hello, hello. My name is Cortina Jackson, and you are listening to What's on Cortina Jackson's Mind. I am so excited. I am so excited to be with you because I get to talk about one of my favorite genres of movies, and that's horror thrillers. And I'm very excited as well because I get to talk about that with one of my favorite people. This person gets to accompany me to all the great scary movies that I've seen, or most of them. And so I'm very excited you all to have with me, Mr. Quay McCulloch.
Hello, everybody.
He's introducing himself and how he knows me.
As you just heard from that beautiful introduction, this is my movie buddy, I would say. There is not a single movie that I've seen in the scary genre that I haven't gone with my mother, because I feel like as a part of a avid horror movie watcher, it's just not the same if I don't have the person with me that understands how deep the horror movie love goes. And it really has been a genre that I have requested over action or dramas or anything like that, just because it's something that I feel is close to my heart in every way.
Awesome. You're hearing it from the experts right now. We're about to jump into this.
Let's do it.
In this segment, in this particular podcast, I pose the question, scary movies, are we desensitized? And so we're going to, at this time, discuss our favorite scary movies. We're going to talk about the ones that scared us the most, the kind we don't particularly like. So we encourage you, even those who are watching live, tell us what your favorite scary movie is, or if you don't care for scary movies, we would like to know that too. So please feel free to jump in. Those who are listening by podcast, go ahead and send your information in about your scary movies and kind of those things that may have bothered you about them. Okay, so we're going to jump into this a little bit. As I asked, have we become desensitized? I grew up in a Christian home. The only ghost we ever talked about was the Holy Ghost. Amen. In our house. And so we were taught anything else was just plain evil. And so I tell you, I had a real fear of scary movies growing up. And I remember watching a few that terrified me. And they bothered me so bad, I couldn't sleep. And at that time, my mom was a little more lenient. She was in church. You know, they grew up in a God-fearing home. But at that time, she was dating, and she let us go on her dates with her. And so we got the opportunity to watch some scary movies. And it really bothered me. So in order to combat that problem, my mom told me to pray. She encouraged me that when I get scared, if something is bothering me, to pray about it. And so I did. Now, later in life, what happened with her is she began to get closer to God. And when she did, she realized that she couldn't have things into her spirit. They may kind of take away her walk with God. And so it was important, you know, what you put into your spirit, what you take on, you know, is kind of what you become, or, you know. So she began to shy away from the scary movies. But as I grew up, I enjoyed them. And I would pray, like she told me to. I would pray. But now, as I'm trying to get closer to God, I write horror novels. I write thrillers. I love scary movies, as I said before. And so now I'm wondering, am I desensitized or did I grow up? Because what bothered me before does not bother me at all. As a matter of fact, some movies are pretty predictable. And so it really doesn't bother me to watch scary movies. So I'm beginning to wonder, have I just grabbed them and I'm just used to them? Or like I said, movies are so predictable that it doesn't bother me. Or is this something I should watch, you know, my spiritual man about? What do you think on this, Clay? Are we desensitized?
I think we have gotten to the point where we've become desensitized, because if you look throughout media or video games, different things like that, books, back then, say 1988's Chucky, or Child's Play, excuse me, horror movies of that genre then were a new concept. Times before then, you never really saw dolls or things like that that would come to life or be possessed by spirits or evil intentions. So I believe that back then, it was brand new to us. We were scared of it because we didn't fully understand what it was. And I think as we grew older, later on, like in 2001, Jeepers Creepers, you see more different concepts of things that are being repeated and things that we've seen before. And it started a cycle of gruesome content where it was, now we have to go above and beyond what we've seen, because now it's just repetitious. And I think nowadays with children at a young age, 2 and 3 year olds have iPads, Game Boys, Switches. They have access to the internet, YouTube. So they're seeing this at a young age, and they, like, be that as it may, when you were a child, you know, seeing Crows and The Thing and Blob and all these different scary movies, you know, you were frightened as a child then because it was new, but now as you've seen it, you grow up, you get desensitized to the horror classic slashers, beasts, creature features, things like that. Wow. And nowadays, it's just not enough anymore.
Wow, you're right about that. So please tell us what you think of that. If you're watching, if you're listening, are we desensitized, or has, you know, the change of the way that they show things and the way things are featured, are we just used to seeing that? And, you know, it's just entertainment. Is it entertainment, or should we be weary of this? You know,
I think there's a sense of both that we need. It's not enough to be entertained. Now more you want to be thrilled. Yes. It's now more of an experience than a video now. So I think that's where most of your desensitization comes, if that's even a word. That's where it comes from. It's a word today.
The word of the day.
But I think that's where it comes from, is now you want to be thrilled more than seeing a new experience.
That's true. Yeah. Wow. You guys, we're going to jump right into this because we have so much to cover. We have so much great information that you may have heard. Maybe you haven't, about some of your favorite scary movies. So we're going to jump right in. I'm so excited.
Let's do it.
Because, yeah, I'm not desensitized. I just enjoy great movies. So, you know, sometimes the things that scare us, we're fascinated by. There are things now that I'm scared of, that like snakes, for instance. I'm terrified of snakes. Maybe I shouldn't have said it.
You didn't put it out.
So I'm fascinated to watch them on TV. I can watch it on TV, don't want to have anything to do with them live. And so sometimes what we're fascinated, you know, what we're scared of, it's almost like, have you ever been to an air show and you got that fear that there may be a crash, yet people, they're intrigued.
Right.
They're in it. Some people record just for that moment. You know, it's the world we live in. Anywho, we're going to get into these great, great movies that we have seen a lot of. Now, horror movies is a genre itself. But I have categorized it into subgenres because there are different types of scary movies. And so here are the ones that I have grouped into subgenres. And Corey's going to help me out if I miss a genre, if I don't fit something in. But here is what I have listed. Okay. So you have your creature features. Okay, so creature features to me would encompass Pumpkinhead, Jeepers Creepers, Puppet Master. For those who are in their 40s or so, they remember Puppet Master.
Hey, some of the young people watch Puppet Master too. So.
Gremlins. I love the Gremlins. And then there was a movie called The Trolls. So I consider those creature features.
And let's not forget we had Tremors as well that took part in the desert and on the beach. Worms, they were. Interterrestrial worms.
Right. So that would be a creature type thing. Okay. The next subgenre I have is occult movies. This would be like The Omen, Children of the Corn,
Amityville Horror.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Think of that one.
Yes, ma'am.
The Exorcist, probably a very scary one in most people's opinion. The Exorcist, Village of the Damned.
That was a
great movie. If you're afraid of creepy children,
children in general.
Yeah, you should be very afraid of children. So Village of the Damned was a great movie. And then there was Rosemary's Baby. Then you have your animal horror.
Pet Sematary, I think, is one of the most stand out in the animal horror genre.
Yeah, that was great. This is going to be hard. Pet Sematary, then. What else do we have? Jaws, Piranha. There's a movie about this huge bear called Grizzly. It's a great movie. I think it came out in the 70s. And Cujo. Cujo! Who wasn't afraid of dogs after watching Cujo?
But you also do have the Ghost in the Darkness of the lions in Africa from the European settlement. Very good movie with Val Kilmer and Michael Douglas.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I forgot about that one.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you have, let's see, did I say paranormal yet?
Not yet.
Paranormal. Okay. In paranormal, you have, of course, Paranormal Activity, Poltergeist. That has been they did a remake, and there's different with the Poltergeist franchise. The Conjuring. Anyone seen The Conjuring? That was a great movie.
I think you can also count Sinister in that category as well.
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Sinister. So,
wow. Still haven't actually finished that one, to be honest with you.
Be very afraid. Be very afraid. And then Annabelle. Because I think they're coming out with a new Annabelle.
I think they have. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's already out. But I could be wrong.
Annabelle. Wow. Okay. And then you have one, the subgenre that's more popular is your killers and slashers. This would be your.
Jason.
Yes.
Freddy Krueger.
Freddy Krueger.
You have your Bloody Marys.
The town that dreaded sundown. This was another one that was done way back. Had the croaker sack or the potato sack over. The town that dreaded sundown. Would Child's Play fit into that?
Oh yes.
Okay, even though he's a doll.
Well, that kind of goes in a killer because you have it in the occult because he was. Spoiler alert: he was risen back from the dead as a murderer in his previous life, and then he was. Summoned into the doll of Chucky, the good guy doll.
That's very true. And by the way, there will be spoiler alerts. If you've not seen a movie before that you don't want to hear about, make sure you mute. That way you can go back and watch. We'll but try not to spoil it.
Honestly, if you haven't seen these movies yet, you need to come on
board. You need to get on board and watch this stuff. And then I didn't, then there's the category of zombies. There's zombie movies. Werewolf movies and vampire movies. I think I covered all the subgenres. What do you think? Did I leave out one? Or
I'm sure there is ample categories that we can talk about the entire day. But I think that is mainly the main subcategories that we've seen today.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Okay, so some of the great writers and producers. I know my favorites. I've kind of categorized them as well. That make these great films. And trust me, there are tons of them. There are tons. But my favorite, number one, Stephen King. I love Stephen King. He has such a range.
Yes.
Gosh, he's written Pet Cemetery, Christine, Maximum Overdrive, that just to name a few. Oh, Maximum Overdrive. I've not seen this. It's about trust. Can I give that away?
You can. That is the premise of the movie.
These trucks, these diesels that become possessed, demonically possessed, and begin to attack people. Or, I don't know. That is a great. If you've not seen Maximum Overdrive by Stephen King, I encourage you. If you don't think a car or vehicle or, you know, can scare you, watch Christine and Maximum Overdrive. And
I do believe tell me. It's one of the movies that make you think, is it really the car or the driver that causes accidents in America? What do you think?
Whoa. You went there.
I went there. You have to sometimes. You got to push the limit in 2019.
Even think of that. Is it the car or the driver?
Or the driver.
Well, that's a new show. I also enjoy the workings of Clive Barker. Now, Clive Barker did your Hellraiser franchise. Hellraiser. And he did Candyman, for those who are familiar with Candyman. Then there's John Carpenter. John Carpenter did Halloween. He did The Fog, if anyone has seen The Fog. And The Thing. I'm going to discuss The Thing by John Carpenter. And my number two favorite person is Eli Roth. Now, I like Eli Roth because I became familiar with him. He did Inglourious Basterds. And though that's not a scary movie, it really made me pay attention to Eli Roth. And so Eli Roth has also done Hostel. He did Cabin Fever. Gosh, he's been instrumental in a couple of great movies.
And I think the great thing about Eli Roth is his attention to detail, especially in Inglourious Basterds, as you mentioned earlier, just the fact of not only the history at that time of the German takeover with Hitler, but also in his history, I have to go back to your page here.
Yeah.
As he did Hostel, which actually did take place in true life. I just think he pays so much attention to these circumstances that happen, and he kind of puts his own spin on it to where you kind of don't know where the edge of reality is compared to his creative genius.
Absolutely. Yes, indeed. Okay, we are about to, I forgot one more. I got to mention him.
I hope it's the one I was thinking about.
I don't know. George Romero.
It was not.
There you are.
Wrong.
George Romero. George Romero is known as the king of zombies. He did all of your popular Dawn of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead. He did a movie called The Crazies, which had that zombie-ish vibe to it. So, and I know since I missed the one he wanted, I'm sure he has another great.
You forgot Massachusetts' own Robert Cummings, a.k.a. known as Rob Zombie. One of the greatest in the horror movie genre, as well as a well-known rocker. He had
Rob Zombie.
One of the most creative minds, which actually he was the creator of Halloween. Well, more specifically the 2007 Halloween.
Oh, gosh. Yes. And I actually like that. Sometimes remakes are hard to do, mm-hmm. to keep up with, if it's already a great movie, it's hard to follow that
right.
up. But I think Rob Zombie did an awesome job at remaking Halloween.
Yes, kudos to you, Rob Zombie.
Yes. So we are going to hear now from my guest, Quay. And Quay, we're going to get to hear about your favorite scary movies. Perhaps explain the premise of some of those movies. What you found interesting, the type of movies that you may not like. Because I know I have certain scary movies I do not like at all. I'll tell you about those.
But, I guess I'll start with my dislikes. I think that would be a much shorter list. For people that do know me, I am not a very big arachnid fan. So back in the day when I was little, I can't remember the exact year, but there was a movie called Eight-Legged Freaks. And Eight-Legged Freaks was a movie about a scientist that was doing genetic experiments on spiders and different creatures like that. And one day, his experiments got away from him, and they became a lot bigger than what he expected. They became about 8 to 10 feet long, tall, excuse me. And they decided to take over the town of where they were. And in this movie, I remember sitting next to my mom, and you know, she was having a wonderful time, smiling, laughing, giggling, and I was mortified. never been a spider fan. I think that's literally one of my only dislikes. As far as my list of likes, I'll have to start with Jason Voorhees. Jason Voorhees was a 9-film series, starting with the first one, was supposed to be Jason Voorhees, but it was later known that his mother was the first killer, Pamela Voorhees. Now, Pamela Voorhees was one of the camp's cooks, and she was hired to cook all the meals for the counselors and everything like that, and she used to bring her son Jason along with her. And as Jason would play on the camp, you know, he would be by his mother's side, that way he would be looked after because Jason had a deformity. And this deformity kind of separated him from the other children. One day, all the counselors were away doing what counselors do at camps. Not all camps, but they were at Camp Crystal Lake. And Jason ended up getting drowned that day. Now, when his mother Pamela found out, Pamela was mortified, and she ended up going on a killing spree of all the counselors. And it wasn't until 22 years later that Jason was drowned that they came out with the first Friday the 13th. Now, on Friday the 13th, Pamela wanted revenge for Jason, Pamela would follow all the counselors and kill them, and it never really was revealed that Pamela was the killer until one of the last scenes. And on this last scene, the last counselor, I couldn't remember her name, I couldn't get through there, but she ended up being beheaded. As you see in the second film, Jason Voorhees was revived through the lake. And he ended up gathering Pamela's head in her sweater and created a shrine in this camp that he called home. And so on and so forth, Jason became a well-known 9-series killer. And I think he has to be one of my main favorites just because of the psychology of Jason. It gets to the point of where, I don't know if you do this, but sometimes you feel for the killer, as a force of, was he justified in his killings, or was it just out of spite?
It's
one of those things psychologically you can tie yourself to, because a lot of people have been bullied or have been made fun of because of deformities or maybe social status or different factors like that in their lives. So it kind of gives them something to grab onto.
Yeah.
Hopefully it wouldn't lead to copycat killers. But
unfortunately,
however,
it
does give you something to link to in their cases. Another favorite of mine has to be Chucky from the Child's Play series. Now, there was a 3-part Child's Play series that was created by Brad Dorfman that later turned into the Bride of Chucky, the Seed of Chucky, and then the Curse of Chucky in 2013. Now, Chucky was the premise of a good guy doll factory. I can't even remember the name of the toy factory, but they were the good guy dolls. And it was a popular toy at the time that all children wanted from the store. Our main character, Andy, finally got his wish of getting a good guy doll. Now, at this time, there was a famous serial murderer that was going around town killing a bunch of people. And on his dying wish, he created a seance that put his spirit inside the doll of a good guy doll. And this led to the birth of Chucky as this killing psycho doll that was spirit haunted.
Wow.
This was always one of my favorites because not only we grew up in a household with her sister, she's okay with me giving out her name, but Angela, she used to keep several dolls in her room.
She did.
And it was probably, 23, 24 different dolls that used to stay at the foot of the bed. So there was always an uneasiness staying in that room, but I couldn't really understand why until 1988. Child's Play was played for me in the living room during a Halloween movie night. And ever since then, anything like Dead Silence, Child's Play, anything that had to do with a doll being possessed was super creepy to me because it was too close to home, literally.
Wow.
So I think it's one of those things where, especially with Alex Vincent playing his game in the first two, he did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah.
Just in his emotional connection to Chucky when he was still the good guy doll.
Yeah.
And later on in the film, you do realize he's Chucky, and just the wonderful, I say wonderful, but the expressions on their face, just it gives you an encapsulation into the movie that you just never feel anywhere else.
Wow.
So it's just one of those movies that I've always really loved watching.
Scary.
Yes, indeed.
That's great. You touched on that. I saw that, and he's right. You would think a doll. But it's something we could relate to because people have dolls. We see dolls, kids play with them, and then to have an evil spirit to encompass a doll, what a different concept.
Right.
And it really did, the first one actually really did scare me. They started getting comical after a while.
And I was going to bring that up too, mainly on our topic of are we being desensitized. I believe with that 1988 adaptation of Child's Play, it was one of those movies where it was never done before. You never really saw rituals in movies.
Yeah.
When you started getting later on into The Bride of Chucky in 1998 with Jennifer Tilghman and Brad Dorfman still being the director of that, you get to the point of where you had Jennifer Tilghman as a follower of Chucky, to where she wanted to resurrect him herself to go on a killing spree with him.
Huh.
And I think that really modeled after the 90s children, because it kind of gives you like a connection to a killer where, oh man, I feel like he would be somebody I wouldn't be really too much scared of, but somebody I can really join and be accomplice of.
Hmm.
You also see another example of this in The Good Son.
Ooh.
Whereas The Good Son, where he wanted to be a follower of his favorite killer, the Bowtie Killer. And with this, it kind of gives you a parallel of, hey, I kind of want to be this person when I grow up, or I want to be with this person. And I really think that modeled it in the 90s. And then later on in 2004, you get Seed of Chucky, where it had completely gone to a more comical side, where even in the first scene, I don't know if you remember, but they were doing a film shoot, and Chucky had his hilarious mishap, where he kept repeating himself because he had a short in his wiring system.
Yes.
And you see from then, it's not going to be more of a serious slasher.
Yeah.
It's more of a comical thriller where you're trying to see what could Chucky do now that's going to be more comical than the first one. So I think that really shows you how far movies have gone from being a horror experience to now a comical experience in the same span.
You like that? Did you compare from the very first Child's Play to the more Seed of Chucky? And did you like it? Did you like the transition, or did you think?
Well, I'd say no, because I don't. If you remember in Child's Play 2, where they were at the theme park and they had a scythe animatronic. Now this animatronic broke and it slashes through half of Chucky's face, and that was one of the real insider looks where you got to see the inside of what Chucky was known to be. Up until then, you thought he was just a doll that could bleed, but upon seeing the scene, you saw that he actually had organs and blood and muscles that actually worked. It showed you that he was alive.
Wow.
But when you go to classics like Curse of Chucky, you now see that they don't really harp on it as much. They just show, oh, he's a killer doll that can die and come back and nobody can really stop him.
Right.
So I don't know. I think having the scary aspects of movies makes it more enjoyable because you're like, it's an unstoppable force that I can't beat. When you make it comical, it kind of takes the scare factor out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen Have you seen the newest one?
I haven't.
We may see that today.
it's worth a shot.
We may go, we'll have to talk about that on the next show. We may go see the newest Child's Play that just came out a couple weeks ago today. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I also had a favorite in the Jason, as I said. Now, I don't know if you knew this, but Jason actually had 13 different players of the Jason title. A lot of people really remember Kane Hodder because he was the only one in the series that had a 4-movie sequel.
Wow.
What they tried to do was, you know, every time they have a sequel, an actor's salary increases. So what the director company did was they wanted to cut down salary because you have a hockey mask and a big guy.
Right.
How many people fit that description?
Right.
When you don't have...
Kane Hodder did great.
He did an amazing job.
My favorite one.
But when you have the original Richard Brooker, he kind of played it in a different way. In the first movie, like I said, it was Pamela Voorhees, but in the second one, you kind of get the sack masked character of Jason, which I think was a very popular appearance of most slashers back in
right.
the day.
Right, like the town with the dread sundown.
You had the strangers. Yes. And then with Jason doing the potato sack, it was kind of redundant.
Right.
So after the first play of Richard Brooker, the director had a hockey mask in his closet. And they realized if we did the potato sack thing, they would just think it was the same movie over and over. So Tom Savini, a wonderful guy, he actually was the creative design behind Jason's deformities. Jason was actually going to be a normal kid until Tom spoke out and said, let's give him deformities.
Oh, man.
Which is why at the end scene of the first movie, you get a deformed Jason that grabs out from the lake, grabs the camera counselor and pulls her back down.
Yes.
but after this movie design, we had the director come forth, and he had an old hockey mask in his closet that he was like, you know what, I'm not using it anymore. Fun fact, he actually did play hockey. But he gave the hockey mask to Jason and kind of formed it to his face and enlarged it, and that became the hockey mask that Jason wore throughout the other remaining 7 films.
Get out of here! Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I wonder how many of y'all knew that. That's very interesting.
It's just one of those things where you have creative minds on a project that go beyond what you would think of a normal slasher and really give it thought and make it different between other movies that are in the same genre, not necessarily doing the same idea, but making it different.
Right.
And who could ever forget the chilling
Everyone knows that sound.
But did you know it's actually not a What it is the director tried to slow it down from Jason's young voice saying, kill, 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 mom, 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 as an homage to the first movie of getting revenge for Jason's death. So every time that plays, it just plays back to the shrine that was built into Jason's camp, reminding him to get the revenge for his mother for all the counselors that have killed him and all the future counselors.
Where'd you get this information?
I'm telling you,
terrific. I'm 40-something years old, never knew that.
So every time you hear that, you hear somebody saying, you have to correct them and say that it is kill, 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 mom, mom, mom.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Huh. Nice mother-son movie for us to watch.
Yeah.
Kill, 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 son.
Yes, indeed. But did you know Jason's name wasn't always going to be Jason?
No.
When they first did the premise of the movie, his name was actually going to be Josh for you. So you would have had cult classics as Josh Goes to Hell.
Oh, no.
You would have had Freddy versus Josh.
Oh, no. It's too sweet.
Well, that's what the director said. He would have said you would have had more of like a happy-go-lucky camping trip more than you would a chilling thrasher that you have now. The original title of the movie was supposed to be Josh Voorhees and the Long Night of Camp Blood. How many people does that scare?
Nah.
So it's just a fun fact of little creative designs that that they changed in order to make things more thrilling for the audience.
That is so cool.
Yes.
I never knew that. So all of you who were named Josh, you have the very sweet name.
We love you, Josh.
That could never be a killer name.
Don't be a Jason.
Jason. I'm sorry, Jason's out there in the world. But that is, you know, it's just those little details like that that really make or break a movie, I guess. You know, it could have went totally different.
Well, did you have any favorites that maybe stood out in your childhood or maybe even later in life?
Oh, man. You have come out with some great ones. Wow, we're on one accord. And it was very hard to try to find three of my favorite because I've had a lot. As we mentioned, all the subgenres, I like movies in each of those genres, so it's very hard. But I narrowed them down. But first, I will talk about movies that that scared me. When I mentioned earlier how I had nightmares, couldn't sleep, one of the first movies that I watched that deeply scared me was a movie called The Thing. It was written by John Carpenter. It's actually a remake, The Thing. And basically, this movie, this may be a spoiler alert. I don't think so. I'm just giving the premise of the movie. But it's about a research team, about 12 men who go to Antarctica. And it's haunted. They're haunted by this shape-shifting alien. And this alien could take on the form of its victims. So all of these men would, this alien would go inside these different men, and no one knew who the killer was or who was next or how this thing would manifest or come out. And it was very, very chilling because now when I go back and I look at the graphics, I kind of laugh because there's a scene, I don't want to spoil it for you, but a man is on the table and this thing comes out of his chest and his neck. And it's just, boy, I tell you, that scared me so bad back then. But now I look at it and laugh, you know, as I do most of those movies that were made back then. But still, terrific, terrific directing and writing for this movie called The Thing. It came out in 1974. I do believe they remade that, you know, for you Generation Y and millennial babies. It was redone, but the 1974 one, it starred Kurt Russell, and a very good movie. Go back and watch some of these. I think you'll really enjoy it. So The Thing scared me, and it kind of teetered almost like The Alien or Alien, where you see...
Got interruption.
Danger. You want to stop
Danger,
that
Will one? Robinson.
Which one? The video up top, if you can stop that one.
Oh, yeah, I think
we do. Yes, I know we had some great graphics in the background for you guys, so we want to keep those going. It's making the video very interesting. But so this was, it was very much like Alien. Sigourney Weaver was in that one. Researchers go, you know, there's this alien that's on board, that's manifesting in different ways. Very scary. Now, here's one that those who are in their 40s may remember. There was a movie called It's Alive. And this movie, for some reason, it really did scare me. It really frightened me a lot. Now, It's Alive came out in 1974, and I saw this movie when I was about 10 or 11. Basically, it's about a couple who has a baby. They're expecting this baby, and this thing turns out to be some kind of creature or vampire. And what happens is it's got this taste for blood. It's born, they're in the emergency room or they're in the delivery room, and this baby, doctors are found dead in the delivery room. Everyone's dead. And the baby has disappeared. So you don't have this baby anymore, but there's blood everywhere. And the next morning, this baby shows up at a house. This woman comes outside, and there's this creature baby with claws and fangs, and it kills her. And then this baby goes on this killing spree. trying to get back to its home, to its mother and father, and it makes its way around the city through the sewer system. Very creepy. It really, really scared me. It's alive. And if you go back and watch the trailer for it, the guy keeps just saying, "It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!" And you know, you just get this real creepy vibe, knowing that there's this killer baby on the loose. Great, great film, but scared me. So now to my favorite movies. This, as I told you, this is hard. So, all right, we got our graphics back. That's important, huh? Kind of gives it a creepy feel.
Yeah, it's not creepy when you have no signal. Actually, that is creepy. No signal nowadays means terror.
Don't let the internet go down. That's the scariest part about this whole thing. My number one favorite scary movie is An American Werewolf in London. I loved this movie. He knows, because I'm always, for Halloween, I like to fix up my porch and fix up things. And I'm always trying to do a theme around werewolves. I love werewolves.
Yeah, my poor Victor Shay. He got to experience your love for werewolf movies as well.
Oh, gosh, do I love werewolf movies. Yeah, poor thing. Yeah, his brother is always the victim during Halloween.
Well, I mean, you either say what role you want to be, you get volunteered for the victim.
There you go. There, you're a victim in my home. This movie came out. Let me get my facts. It came out in 1981, and it won an Oscar for Best Makeup, and it won several other awards, including a Saturn Award for Best Writing. It's a great werewolf movie about these two friends who do this tour, this British tour. They're out hiking, and they get attacked by a wolf, and one dies, one goes back home to America. And now he has to live with this evil of being a werewolf. The transformations in this were cool. I got to go to, we got to go to Universal Studios, California, I believe. And there's a tour, a horror tour of movies. And they showed how they did the transformations for American Werewolf in London and how they took hair and pulled it through. And what they did to make the scene that looks like the hair is sprouting out on his body is they filmed it in reverse. So they pulled these hairs through a mesh. Yeah. And they just filmed it backwards so it looks like the hair is coming out. Terrific. Terrific movie. I love this movie. But unfortunately, you don't see too many great werewolf movies.
Until later on when you had, 1997's An American Werewolf in Paris. I think Anthony Waller.
I'm sorry. I give it a thumbs down. But please tell us about it.
Anthony Waller did a great job to me at the time when I was little, because it kind of gave you the inside of what an American would be like in Paris. You had the scholar, the main character. You had Tom Everett Scott, who played really the one who knew most about Paris. He knew the translations and everything like that. And then you had Vince Falloup, please forgive me if I butchered that, who was also in Skate, if people remember that, played his best friend, kind of dumbfounded. You always have that one, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
But they took their tour to Paris to see who could get the most out of Paris, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
And upon going to Paris, they were thrill seekers. So in order to top the dare that his friends did, Tom Scott ended by saying he would bungee jump off the top of the Empire State Building.
Right.
Or not the Empire State Building, forgive me. The Eiffel Tower.
Right.
Upon jumping, he sees a young woman who later on in the film, spoiler alert, is one of the werewolves that's looking for a cure. I feel like this was a very well done movie by Anthony Waller, because it gives you an insight of what a cult werewolf would be if there was an underground society of people that become werewolves in order to eat and grow their population. As far as graphics, you know, it's 1997. So, I mean, at the time, it was the best that you can get.
Right.
However, not always the best.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, that movie did have some very creepy moments. I did like you said, the part that there could be the secret society. And so, spoiler alert again, there's this part where they're inside and they lock people into this nightclub, and then they begin their transformation. And so, for those parts, I really thought it was a great movie. They tried to be a little comical, more than American Werewolf in London. So it had its kind of funny moments, but you're right. I won't give it a complete thumbs down because there were some parts in there that creeped me out for American Werewolf in Paris. So you're right, very still, because I love werewolf movies, you almost can't go wrong. So I have another great werewolf movie that I enjoyed was one called The Wolfman. And this starred Benicio del Toro. I love. I really like Benicio del Toro, and Anthony Hopkins. Great film. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. There was also one called Wolf, which starred Jack Nicholson and Michelle Pfeiffer. Another great werewolf movie. But I don't know. Overall.
I'm surprised you didn't mention your other werewolf movie with the vampires.
Oh, I almost forgot.
I can't even think of it right now.
Oh my gosh, you're right. It was the Lycans and the vampires. I did enjoy this movie because...
Underworld.
How can I forget Underworld? Great movie. Great concept in that you had the werewolves versus the vampires. Oh, how could I forget? You're right. You're right. A lot of CGI effect on that one because it of course was done, you know, nowadays where CGI is. I don't know. I'm old school, and I really appreciate the detail that was taken for them to do these films without CGI effect. CGI is great because now they can really add great elements in it, but. Yeah, that was very good.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Just a side note, there was a TV show called Werewolf. This isn't about movies, but back then, it came out in 1987. I love this show. I love this show. And it only had 28 episodes to it before it was canceled in 1988. I wish it would come back. You know, I've even tried to find old episodes, just can't find it anywhere. It still has its IMDb page up, but I don't know. I guess it didn't get great viewership, but the werewolf transformation in that TV series to me was fantastic. I wish it would come back. So if the writer producer hears me, his name is Frank Lupo. Frank Lupo, if you hear me.
Help us, please.
Bring Werewolf back. Great, great show. Okay, enough on werewolves. That was my number one. My number two is under the subgenre animal horror. So Jaws. I cannot even tell you how many times I've seen Jaws. I can quote that movie verbatim.
She's not playing either. Will do it at the top of
dying. I love Jaws. I love all the Jaws movies. Part 3, they tried to do a Jaws 3D. It wasn't as great as the rest of them, but I mean, how can you go wrong with a killer great white shark? I think things scare me that could possibly happen for real. And so we know shark attacks are real.
Right.
Who cannot forget the nice musical score to everybody knows the score for Jaws. And so when people visit the beach, that you can hear people doing the score for Jaws, even if the beach is now. There's just something terrible about, or scary about something that is so large that could reach the size of a bus that could come over you and there's nothing you can do about it. Because you are in their element. You're in the water.
Right.
That's where they thrive.
I don't know if people think about it. You know, you try and run on the street and people think, oh, yeah, I'm very fast. But when you're in water, running goes out the window.
Oh,
there's nothing you can do to get away from that.
Oh, gosh.
You have something swimming about 45 miles an hour towards you.
what can you do? They say poke it in the eye. But think about a bus coming at you and you try to touch the taillight. I mean, this is something so fast that comes upon you. It scares me. And so I've seen great, Jaws is of course my favorite, but I enjoy 48 meters. Is it 47 meters?
I think it's 47. Yeah. 48 is going to be the sequel.
That is coming out.
Yes. Yes.
We went and saw the Meg, which is the Megalodon. Yes. Terrific shark movie. I love shark movies.
Spoiler, I was not prepared for a second one.
Are they doing a second?
The second one in the film. Remember the one that they thought they had killed? And then the second one showed up.
Yes.
I was not prepared for a second.
You got to see it. If you've not seen the Meg, you like shark movies, even if you don't.
Even if you love dogs,
you gotta go see the Meg. And I'm sure everyone's seen Jaws, but if you haven't, shame on you. Shame on you. Jaws, come on. Okay, my third favorite movie was by M. Night. Forgive me for this, if I butcher this. Is it Shyamalan? M. Night Shyamalan. I just call him M. Night. Signs. When I tell you, I went to the movies, paid money, and saw Signs back to back like 5 times. The first time I went by myself, and I was so fascinated. The next time I took a family member, then the next time I took another family member, I just kept bringing people because that was a great movie by M. Night. Now, this starred Mel Gibson, who played the father of two children, one of which was Rory Culkin, Macaulay Culkin's younger brother. And Abigail Breslin also played the daughter. She's a great actress.
Yeah.
And then Joaquin Phoenix, who will be doing the Joker.
Oh, yeah.
Joaquin will be doing the Joker movie coming up. So when you see him, imagine him in Signs. I like Joaquin. I really like him as an actor. So basically, the premise of this movie is they discover these crop circles in their fields. And these crop circles end up turning up everywhere. Mexico, all over the world, these crop circles exist. And in the movie, they, I won't give away too much, but an alien is discovered in their pantry, in Mel Gibson's pantry. Mm-hmm. They catch who is responsible, supposedly, for these crop circles. The media has put it out. There are aliens, and they catch it. And so they put this knife under the door so they can see it without opening the door, and you get your first glimpse of this alien, this creature. And before you know it, other aliens start invading this farmhouse. And this, it had such serious, quiet moments to it that you just get drawn into the storyline. You're just like sitting there watching it, and it wasn't a lot of, it was some jump scares in there, but it was just, I tell you, I was so fascinated by this movie. And I don't know if it did well or not.
If anything, I know it made a 2007's top most requested Paul's video compilation. The scene where they are watching the newscast,
that's one of my favorites,
the alien walking across the screen.
Yes.
That is like one of the most paused scenes in horror films.
I believe.
And they definitely topped the list on that one.
That part creeped me out. It really did. That's one of those quiet scenes you're watching. You're watching a newscast in the movie, and this alien goes.
Beautiful, beautiful scene.
That is a great. I like M. Night. He doesn't get a lot of. I don't know. Either you love M. Night or you don't. But he is a great, to me, very great director. I love M. Night. He also did The Lady in the Water.
Which is one of my favorites.
Really?
I absolutely love Lady in the Water. Mainly because it was a concept you've really seen. You know, up until that time, the villain was always out in the open or chasing after you or something like that. Lady in the Water really produced its antagonist from holding up a mirror and looking into the mirror and seeing the red eyes in the grass, kind of giving you the feeling of there's always something watching you. And it's like an aspect that you don't really get too much in movies.
Yeah.
And I think just that genuine fear of, like, there was something always there that we always passed. There was always next. Wow. I love that concept.
I think M. Night does an amazing. He also did Split.
Yes.
M. Night just has I almost write in the style of M. Night. His, to me, he makes you think. It's just a creepy vibe, just a great storyline. And like I said, people either love him or hate him.
Right.
And I like M. Night's work. So Signs would be my third one. Yes. And now, the type of horror movies that I really don't care for. Number one, I don't like demonic movies. Things that talk about demons. As I said, I was raised in church, and so demons, it's a very real thing to me. And so I don't really care for movies that that show demons. And then I do not like almost like snuff films, gore, overkill movies, overly bloody movies that are just way too, like, just over the top.
Right.
I don't like them too much. I can't even name one, but okay, yes, I can. Here we go.
Would you consider Freddy as one of those that's over the top?
No. I mean, some movies, they do have a lot of, they are bloody, they're gory, they're too much, but there's that, and then there's those that just go, like, just, there are things that you just don't need to see. I just don't need to see it.
And one of the Freddy Kruegers, a lot of people would argue that Johnny Depp's death in the first one would be considered overkill, with him being pulled down into the bed in a literal geyser of blood continued to spray for several minutes.
You're right. Mm-hmm. What do y'all think out there? Do you think the scene in Nightmare on Elm Street was overkill? I didn't consider that one too much. There's a movie called I Spit on Your Grave where a young lady was raped and she gets her revenge. And some people would consider that overkill.
Right.
Some of the scenes, spoiler alert, where she puts fish hook in someone's eye and pulls the eyelids back, and birds then, you know, there are some that really go even further than that, like I said, that are almost snuff films, and they're just too much for me. I spoke that I love Eli Roth, however, and I love all kinds of scary movies, seen them all, they don't bother me at all. One movie has bothered me bad. This movie bothered me so bad that during the movie, I actually had to put my head down and I closed my eyes for a moment because I didn't want to see what was coming next.
Right.
And that is rare for me. That never happens. Uh-oh, our film stopped up there. We gotta keep that going.
Goodness.
I know, it's freezing up on us. What's going on? We got some paranormal activity.
Even the video gets scared. It freezes up.
So this movie was called Green Inferno by Eli Roth. When I tell you, oh my gosh, this one really, really bothered me. Here's why. Here's what the movie's about. Basically, it's about these college students who are activists, and they want to save they want to go to the Amazon and save the rainforest. And so they travel to the Amazon. While they're there protesting against these terrible happenings in the rainforest, some of the indigenous people there take them captive because they think that they are there to, you know, destroy their land or whatever. And these people are actually cannibals. And they begin to torture these college students who are going there to actually save the rainforest. Oh my gosh. So they fly to this remote village and they have to go by boat to get to this. These villagers capture them, and when they wake up, they're in this remote village that has nothing, you know, they're far off from civilization. And then the torture begins. So I saw an interview with Eli Roth, and this was actually shot really in Peru.
It was shot in the Amazon of Peru. And this place that they went to was so remote that they had to hike for a while. Then they took an hour boat ride. And then, you know, it was just to get to this place. So now when they get to this remote village, these people have never seen a camera before, ever. This is real life. These villagers that were there had never seen a camera, had never heard of a movie, had never even seen a TV. And so Eli Roth had to get Peruvian directors to talk to them and ask them, tell them about what they were doing there, that they were going to film this movie about cannibals that eat and kill people. And the villagers thought it was so funny. They thought the idea was hilarious. It was about 300 of these villagers. And the elders of this village had to come together and decide if this was allowed in their village. And they agreed. Kids and all. Everybody, all 300 people signed up to be in the movie. And when you see this movie, to realize that these people had never seen a movie before, they were all, when I tell you they were terrific actors and made it very, very real that they were cannibals who thought the whole idea was funny. They played their part. Oh my gosh. Yeah. There's even a scene where two girls are locked in a cage awaiting their torture. And in real life, the kids in the village had caught a boa constrictor. And they told Eli Roth, hey, we have an idea for you. How about you use the snake? We can use the snake in the scene. And Eli Roth thought it was a great idea. So in the scene, you see these children dangling this boa constrictor above the heads of these two girls, these two actresses, who were thinking, wait a minute, does this snake, you know, the poisonous? And they were like, nah, it's not. And Eli Roth had to direct them not to get the snake too close to their faces. But the kill scenes in this, the cannibalism was so very real that it was disturbing. I'm telling you, I lowered my head. That's something I never do. That's unheard of. I can make it through anything. But to this day, I can't watch that again. And I love Eli Roth, and I cannot watch it. No, Quay has not seen that movie.
I have not. Now after hearing it, I have. Who doesn't like Peruvian cults that don't really exist here?
You got to see it for the acting to realize that these villagers took part in this and. The acting is superb. I'm just so impressed by the acting. I'm wanting to be an actress, and it really sometimes it's hard for me to get into character and really do it right. They did it right.
On the first try,
they've never done it before. They did it right. Green Inferno. If you're interested in cannibalism,
That's going to be on my watch list.
Oh God! So those are some of my favorite. Scary movies, but we do have our honorable mentions. We have our honorable mentions because it was very hard to determine which ones were the best. So we're kind of gonna go back and forth on these honorable mentions. For me, the movie It by Stephen King, the new one, the guy who plays Pennywise, his brother, I'm in love with, because his brother played a vampire on the show.
Bill Skarsgård.
Skarsgård, because I'm in love with Alexander Skarsgård. So Pennywise is played by his brother. Say his name again.
Bill Skarsgård.
Bill Skarsgård played Pennywise. And did a fabulous job. And now part two will be coming out soon. I am so excited for that one.
The day it comes out, we are going.
Oh, absolutely. I have a couple of, we may agree on some of these honorable mentions.
I'm sure.
Get Out. by Jordan Peele. I mean, you just cannot go without. Gosh, it was
a young mind too to come up with that concept, something that is very controversial to this day.
Yes, very, very interesting concept. I love Jordan Peele, and you know, also the fact that it's more prevalent now in the African American community, who oftentimes does not, you know, didn't care for that genre much, or you didn't hear much about writing from an African American perspective. I thought Get Out was a great movie. I'm excited about that one.
Definitely a go-see if you need to.
For sure.
For an honorable mention for me, I did 2007's The Mist.
Ooh.
Yes, indeed.
Ooh.
I thought it was a unique concept. Kind of played on the fog, but this one, it had its large spiders and things like that. But what really made this difficult for me to put into my favorites was the ending, really. It was a very traumatic, spoiler alert. It was a very traumatic ending where you see the family had escaped from the supermarket and they had loaded into the family vehicle and they were on their way trying to drive out of town, try to outweigh the mist, see if they can get to the edge of it. Finally, their vehicle ran out of gas and there was nothing they could do. They weren't going to run out into the mist. They certainly weren't going to wait it out. So the father loaded a pistol. And he said his goodbyes and ended up killing his son and his daughter. Ended up using one of the bullets to kill his wife. And when he got to himself, he fired and the gun would not discharge. And 2 minutes later, you see the military rolling by as the mist clears up. Yeah. The father's just sat there distraught. Now seeing that his family's dead by his own hands and there was safety literally 3 minutes away.
Oh my God.
It was one of the saddest endings to me.
Fantastic.
I loved it though.
And then I don't think we ever knew what
it was.
What called the mist? You never really knew. You knew there were creatures out there, but you know, even to go beyond that, that blows my mind is this happened. The mist clears up. The military comes. Who's the killer? The man or the mist? Could he really blame it on a mist when he's the one with the gun?
True.
It blew my mind.
On that same weather condition category, you can still have The Happening. Ooh. Where it was another weather concerned murder, where it was just a natural phenomenon that people really couldn't understand, but it still leaves people killing themselves and ending to death.
That's great. Oh man, Wow, you're mentioning some great ones that I forgot about. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
Something about those natural disasters too. Again, things that could really happen really do scare me a lot because I'm thinking, wow, what if?
I think it's the tragic four words inspired by true events. Anytime you see that, I think it just ups the level of fear and terror.
Wow.
Yes, indeed.
The Purge.
Oh, love it.
The Purge.
Very political. Very good.
It is. It's very political. You can see the themes. You can kind of read between the lines in The Purge. And it just, they've come out with a TV show called The Purge.
Good.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it's great. We're going to talk about TV shows later. But The Purge, outstanding. Outstanding.
I think they timed out the third one just right with the election of Trump and Hillary. It kind of gave you a parallel of the main character and the antagonist, kind of maybe future themes that we could see in America, or maybe even things that go on today that's not as seen as a big game, but things we still have to deal with in day-to-day life.
That's a scary thought. You wonder, for those who haven't seen it, you get one night to kill anybody that you want, commit any crime that you want. You will not be judged, you will not be convicted.
Right.
You can kill anyone for that period of time. And people go into hiding, or some people exercise their right to purge.
Speaking of hiding, I thought it was a very interesting theme that even though people couldn't be penalized for their murders for 12 hours, you still saw, even in the first one, the smiling masks. Mm. And people still went through the trouble and the hassle of hiding their face during the murders, even when nothing would be held against them during these murders.
You're right.
So then is it a routine
of somebody that they've seen do before? Is it really just a cinematic on the murders?
That's great. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
You have another on your list?
I sure do. I don't know if anybody's seen it, but Netflix put out an independent movie named Hush. Hush was a very, very good movie. It starred the protagonist being a deaf woman that had to operate in the woods, and she learned to create different alarm systems and alerts that way that she would still know what's going on in the house without having to hear it. Now, there was a hunter. I think they just called him the man in the final edit.
Yeah.
But he ended up being a silent killer that kind of toyed with the main character. And it left me on edge the entire ride through.
Great movie.
I love that movie. Right. If you haven't seen it on Netflix, please do go look it up. It is a very good movie. Just to sit around the house on a weekend night, very good movie.
Wow.
Yes, yes.
Okay, I'll run through these other ones. I like Saw. Saw movies.
Yes, indeed.
Saw and also Final Destination, equally to me. Just fantastic. I love Final Destination because it was a very different concept in that you got to escape death. There was a person that had a premonition that death was, you know, that a scene had happened and was able to tell others, hey, we're going to die. We're going to die if we go through with this. And sure enough, it happens. And now it works backward to take out those who escaped death the first time. This was hard. This was my, I say I had those three favorite, but it was hard not to put Final Destination in there. I love Final Destination.
That was a tough pill to swallow too.
Oh God.
I think it scared people in day-to-day life. Even when you're just cooking, you know, a lot of people from the pop of the grease, whenever you're frying something, I think that's one of those natural instincts to run and hide. But I can see in Final Destination, it makes everything you do meticulous.
Yes.
You don't want any kind of backlash or any type of thing that can come back and kill you. So I think it's one of those things that makes you think more about what you do and how you do it.
You know, I saw a Facebook post where there were logs on the back of this semi and no one wanted to drive. It showed all the vehicles on the left side of the road. No one wanted to drive on the right side behind this truck. And the caption was, Final Destination moment. Because you just think, what if this snaps and a log comes off and there's just this trickle effect? So, yeah, to this day, people still reference Final Destination.
I also had a Krampus on my list.
I was trying hard to think of that one. Could not think of that for nothing in the world. Krampus.
I couldn't remember if it was New York or New Jersey, but they actually created a Krampus holiday. Where they actually do dress up as nightmarish imps for Christmas.
Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, we watched that on Halloween night. We always try to watch that movie on Halloween night, even now.
It's such a wonderful movie. And I think what sets this apart from it is you think of Christmas as such a happy time, and everybody thinks of jolly old Saint Nick, but nobody really thinks about the German side of Krampus.
Yeah.
For all of the
where
that
originated.
Children. Yes.
Yeah.
I think the end, spoiler, really captures that feeling after, you know, the child tried to plead with Krampus that my family's not all as bad as they are. We're just going through tough times. Hmm. And you see the kid fall into the chasm that Krampus has created. And upon waking up, you know, they're back in the house. It's Christmas. Everybody's sitting together. They're getting ready to open up, you know, presents. And you see the food laid out. And everybody's just in a good mood. Until he opens up his present and sees the Krampus bell in the box. And it kind of shocks him to reality that it actually did happen. And you see Krampus has a wall full of different snow globes of families that have gone through the same predicament, which tells you that it's not just the only case that it's happened in.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, that's a great movie too.
I loved that one.
Others, of course, there's, I don't know, 30 Days of Night. Mm-hmm. Carrie, the original came out about in the 70s. Carrie, fantastic. The Strangers, of course. Nightmare on Elm Street. Scream. Devil's Advocate.
Oh, yes, yes.
And then there's another one with Keanu Reeves that you enjoyed as well.
I loved Constantine. Constantine was a wonderful movie, a battle between angels and demons. And I think it's a concept that you don't really see in a prominent way. Especially you see a lot of spiritual warfare nowadays, a lot of attacks of Satan and in people's lives. So to have Constantine, it was like giving humans a hero to fight back against it, even though Constantine wasn't really seen as a hero. He was more of a neutral character. But to me, Constantine was just one of those beautiful movies where it showed that not everything is as it seems, and that there are forces beyond what we see today that could take place in our lives at any moment. So Constantine was one of those really brilliant movies to me. I know Keanu Reeves is on a hot streak right now in video games and multimedia and things like that, even his Cyberpunk showcase that he did. He's really doing an amazing job, and it's all to his work. And I really enjoy Keanu for that. Another one on my list that I had that I don't think this list could be complete without is Psycho. Yes, indeed.
Psycho, of course. Mm-hmm. The one where people were afraid to take a shower with the shower curtain closed.
Yes, indeed. It kind of really stuck out to the see-through curtains.
I have one to this day. I have a seat because of Psycho.
Yes.
Whoa! And that's something.
Yes, but one of my main movies, I don't even know if we have time to talk about it, was Hereditary.
I definitely want to talk about this one. We wanted to save this one for last, yes, because we both saw Hereditary recently. Mm-hmm. Came out a couple of months ago. Has it been this long?
That's a good question.
We went to the theater and saw it, and when we did, when the movie was over, I remember me and Quay sat there kind of looking at each other.
I think we stayed in silence until we got to the car.
We had to sit and really think about this,
yes,
for a while, and when we did, the things that were just kind of, that came about were interesting. Tell us about a little bit about Hereditary.
Well, Hereditary followed the Graham family, and you had Charlie, the young daughter. You had Steve, the husband, that was very strong. Stuck out from the rest of the family as a kind of the normal height.
Right.
You also had Toni Collette, who played
she's
a beautiful role as Annie. She did a wonderful job in emotion and just in capturing the story. And then you had the son, Peter, who
he's
also
fantastic.
Did a wonderful job in that movie.
They all did. Yes, the girl played.
Yes.
Continue. He did superb.
Now, what this movie ended up showing was it was a kind of a cult following. And one of the things that I found hilarious in a way is, you know, Hereditary being as something that's passed down from generation to generation, you see Charlie, who has a deformity of her own. And it kind of pulls down from the grandmother who had the deformity to Charlie, but it also follows Hereditary in the storyline of the cult following, who started from the grandmother, who was the grand witch of the entire cult.
Wow.
Now, it's funny because they the whole movie does an homage to a demon. Are you okay with the name being said, or should we change it? So the movie follows a demon named Payman. And Payman is one of Lucifer's main demons. It's over like riches, and he brings very good success and stuff like that. But one of the main symbols of his following was the symbol of the necklace that the grandmother wore. Now on this pendant, you see four circles and they're all pointed west. Now, the thing that I saw is if you look at this pendant, it shows what I think is four people facing west. And this is the exact requirement for Payman to be resurrected was four people.
Whoa.
If you look at the four people who died in the movie, starting with the grandmother.
Don't give away too much.
Not too much. But starting from the grandmother, because it's okay. The opening scene,
yeah.
Followed by three others.
Right.
However, I do have to talk about one that is a major, major letdown. And it is Charlie's death.
No,
I have to. Because it's an interesting fact in this one.
Oh, my gosh.
What had happened was Peter had got invited to a party, a college party, and there was going to be different drugs and alcohol like the college party is. And the mother said, one condition to go to this party, he had to take his little sister, Charlie. Now, Charlie was probably the age of 6 or 7.
Yeah.
So it really wasn't a good idea in a parental standpoint to send Charlie with them. Exactly. But at this party, one of the friends it shows in the kitchen, he's chopping nuts on the counter, which is known to be Charlie's allergic reaction trigger.
Turn this off if you're going to watch this.
Yes,
don't
indeed.
Want to spoil
no spoilers
because we're about to reveal something.
Yeah, but the brother got a text to go smoke some drugs, and he left Charlie in the kitchen next to the guy that was chopping the nuts. She ends up eating the cake that has her allergic reaction, and she didn't have her EpiPen with her.
Mm.
And on the way home, there was a fateful accident of a deer being in the road, and Peter had to swerve in order to missed the deer, but ended up Charlie having to breathe. She stuck her head out the window and got decapitated. Now, one of the fun facts that I found out was on the same telephone pole, if you rewind earlier to when they were on the way to the party, you can see the same symbol of payment etched into the telephone pole, being as
Whoa.
It was a cold decision that she was going to die at that telephone pole. And it was said that the cult actually put the deer in the road on the way back, knowing that Charlie would have her head out the window
Whoa.
And was decapitated for the second death in the sacrifice to pain.
That's
deep, right?
This movie is super deep.
Full of
you
cult,
have to watch it
yes.
more than once to catch these details.
Yes,
that one is very, I didn't even know that.
Yes, I found that out today, actually.
Jeez.
It's just one of those movies where you know something's not right with the grandma starting at, and then just later on in the film you're just like, this just isn't what it was predestined to be.
Man,
yes.
Hereditary was very deep.
Yeah,
very well acted. I enjoyed it. I guess some didn't. It was a mixed.
It's funny you said that. It had higher ratings in its trailers. When the movie came out, it had a viewer rating of D+, meaning people didn't like it, and it was due to the fact that the advertisements didn't show the actual plot line of the story.
Wow.
So a lot of people thought it was going to be another possession video. Another exorcism going to happen,
right.
And that Charlie was going to be the main centerfold of it just because she didn't look like she belonged in this family.
Right. Wow.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
Interesting. So, yeah, if you didn't get to catch that one because you weren't too sure mm-hmm. about what it was about, this is a two-scene.
I highly recommend
that movie. It was quite good.
Yes.
And that's it. We're reaching out to you. Did any of our movies make your list? And are there any great ones that we left out? Are there any fun facts that we don't know? Because a lot of people are interested. You know, when you see these movies, sometimes you forget about them. You remember the main parts, but then you forget. So even if you have some interesting facts, we definitely want to do a follow-up show, talk about more great movies because there are more to come. There are more we didn't cover. We didn't get close to covering all the movies that, you know, that we could have discussed. So if there's one that you like to hear or discuss or one that didn't make the list, let us know. We would love to hear about it.
Yeah.
Stay tuned as well because we plan on to not only do a follow-up show on movies, but there are some great horror TV shows. Outstanding.
I can't wait.
So we want to do some of those shows like Fear Itself. This is on Netflix now. If you've not seen Fear Itself, great TV show.
We've been caught up on spoilers now on TV shows.
Yes, catch up.
Because I'm sure there will be some that we got to spoil.
For those 80s babies, there was Tales from the Dark Side. Tales from the Dark Side ran from 1984 to 1988. I loved Tales from the Dark Side. Kind of like the other one I'll mention, which is Tales from the Crypt, where you get these little shorts, little 30 to an hour segments. Each one was different. Each one was creepy or unique. Oh, gosh. I want to say George Romero directed some of the episodes on Tales from the Dark Side. Tales from the Crypt had the Crypt Keeper, who was the, you know,
the creepy skeleton
who introduced the show with his evil cackling laugh, and you knew it was going to be a great episode.
Right.
So there's the Tales from the Crypt, 1989 to 1996. But if you, I don't even know if it's showing anywhere. I've checked Netflix. I have Apple TV, and I've not found Tales from the Dark Side or Tales from the Crypt. So if anyone knows where I can see those episodes, I miss them. American Horror Story, my absolute favorite show.
Yeah.
My absolute, as a matter of fact, I just watched Freak Show again not too long ago. And just, if you're not an American Horror Story fan, I don't know what you're waiting on that show. That is my favorite TV show.
I just think it's because
everybody is so good at that show. Everybody, they tend to use the same actors for each season, and they are fantastic. I love American Horror Story. I am a huge fan.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, as an actress, my bucket list, I hope you're hearing me, directors, is to play on an episode of American Horror Story. That's my bucket list.
One day.
Me. Supernatural, which is Quay's favorite. Quay has seen almost every step. Have you seen every episode of Supernatural?
I've seen every single one. Yeah. I've seen them all.
How many episodes? How many seasons is it?
Been? It's like 13 seasons, I want to say.
Supernatural has been on for 13 seasons and still going.
Going strong.
Why, I can't even binge watch. I couldn't even get that all in.
Oh, it's so easy to do.
There's also, we'll talk about The Walking Dead, which was very popular. It's been around a long time now.
We also have to cover Fear of the Walking Dead, also the sequel to it.
Oh, yes. So there's Fear of the Walking Dead, True Blood, which was HBO. True Blood was an outstanding. True Blood had some of everything. It had shapeshifters, vampires, werewolves, fairies, demons. What's my guy that I loved on True Blood? The homosexual guy. Yeah. Oh God. I should know this. His character. Yeah. Unfortunately, that actor passed away not very long ago. But his he's very popular. True Blood. We'll talk about True Blood. I loved that show.
Nelson Ellis.
Nelson, yeah, he was great. Great show. True Blood. I hate that was canceled. And then of course the Twilight Zone.
But even back in the day, it's still a great show.
I still watch the black and white Twilight Zone.
That's the only way to do it. If you're gonna watch it, you must watch the black and white where it came from. Yes.
So while we could go on and on. So our next episode, we hope to follow up and do, you know, favorite TV shows. So if you have any in mind, please let us know if we've missed any of those.
Yes, please.
Thank you so much, Quay, for joining us. And what a great show. This is so exciting.
I've been waiting for it.
You guys, we're going to go out and watch more movies, give you more ratings, talk about things. We'll try not to spoil it too bad for you, but we get so excited about this.
I have something to talk about. Talk about it.
Sorry, y'all. It's going to be that kind of show. any parting remarks, any shout-outs you want to do?
Well, I would love to be a part of the podcast. This has been something we've talked about. After every horror movie we go watch, starting from Halloween, the newest one.
Yeah.
Just so glad to be here. So glad to talk about one of my favorite topics. So glad to be a part of the show. I've seen you and your success and how it's been growing, and I'm glad to be on that same level with you. Just wanted to make some thank yous to Found Flicks on YouTube. Thank you so much for our resources. I want to thank Rebecca at Watch Mojo. I want to thank the Nerd Factory. And I also want to thank What Is Anti-Logic. Gave me some insight for Jason Voorhees on if he wasn't the killer. If you do have time, it would be a great, great thing to watch. It might disturb you into thinking maybe Jason wasn't a killer. Maybe there was some other motive. I want to thank Minty at Comedic Arts, and I also want to thank Taylor and Nita. Thank y'all so much for resources, and I hope more power to your channel and that you continue to get followers. Thank y'all so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. We really appreciate that we were able to glean some of that great information and put it out to a new audience. So yes, we appreciate you. And thank you. This has been What's on Cortina Jackson's Mind. Make sure you follow me on my website at www.CortinaJackson.com. That's CORTINAJackson.com. Follow me on my social media, and I'll let you give your social media as well. But I'm on Facebook at Cortina Jackson. I also have an author's page. I'm an author of 2 fiction thriller novels, On Earth as It Is in Hell, and also The Sounds of Silence Are the Loudest. And I'm so disappointed because I've heard there's a Thriller Fest in New York. All the writers of thriller novels. That's me, and I'm missing it. So maybe next year. I'm on Instagram at MissTina_the_writer. That's M-I-S-S, Tina_the_writer. I'm on Twitter at TinaTheWriter. And I'm on LinkedIn at Cortina Jackson. So make sure you follow me. Keep up. I really enjoy you. What is your social media where they can find you?
I kept mine very simple, so you can follow me on Facebook. I'm Quay McConnick, Q-U-A-Y, last name M-C-C-O-N-I-C. There is a space between the first and the last. Or you can follow me on Instagram at Quay McConnick, Q-U-A-Y-M-C-C-O-N-I-C. That's without the space on the Instagram. You can hit me up there with questions about maybe horror movies, or if you just like the following, you can hit me up on there. I do have an IMDb page for my acting films in The Family and in The Witness. So you can follow me in future productions, or like I said, if you just want to follow. Thank you.
That would be awesome. Make sure you follow us. He's an awesome avid gamer. So not only does he know about,
I forgot to give that shout out.
That's another show altogether. There's some video games that he knows very well.
We'll have to do a side one.
Yeah, we'll talk about that maybe. TV shows, scary video games that are terrifying. They're really getting creative.
I can give that shout out. You can follow me at the Liquor Clan on PSN. We do have what did they call it? I can't even think of it right now. I'll get back to that.
The Liquor Clan.
But on my PSN, you can follow me at Dakari12, DAKARI12, or you can find me at LIQRXDAKARI. You can follow me on the PlayStation Network at any time.
Wonderful. Join us, you guys. If you'd like to be a guest on my show, make sure you hit me up on any of the social media. Hit up Quay for expertise on so many subjects. Make sure you catch us in our acting gigs. The Family, I will be in a movie called Hell Express, and watch us in The Witness. Thank you so much, and we'll see you at the movies.
Thank you, guys.